This podcast is being recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging and acknowledge their ongoing connection to land, waters and culture. Colonization and genocide are ongoing processes that continue to this day. Sovereignty was never ceded. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Hello and welcome to Auspol Snack Pod, the podcast where we bring you bite-sized chunks of Australian politics and news with a side of crispy memes. And we're also the official podcast of the Auspol Shitposting Facebook group. So if you hear us talking about memes or shitposts or the group, just hop onto Facebook and search Auspol Shitposting. My name is Noon. On Facebook, I'm Ino Funkenstein. I'm the creator and admin of Auspol Shitposting. And with me, as always, is my co-host.
Hey, I'm Zach the Snack. I am very tired and sleepy because I've been moving house. So this is probably going to be like a noon heavy episode. I'm going to let you do the bulk of the lifting here.
Yeah, that's fine. I love the sound of my own voice. That's why I got into podcasting.
So, I love the sound of your own voice.
Well, thank you very much, Zach. It's lucky that I'm going to be talking a lot for the next half hour then, because otherwise you'd be in trouble.
Strap in, listeners. Join me.
Just before, while we're still on the subject of my voice, I just thought I'd mention we published the Real Shit Albo this week, which was a reward for our Patreon supporters.
It was like a thank you. We said we'd make it. We said we'd record it if we hit $100 a month on Patreon, and we did.
Which we have. So that's,
thank you so much, all of the cuties that have supported us.
It's really nice. It makes the show possible, and it's really nice to know that people are enjoying it and supporting our efforts. So yeah, thank you. And I hope you enjoyed the Real Shit Albo.
Yeah, and also sorry.
Yes, we're very sorry.
Deeply sorry for it.
Cool. Well, let's move on to our first news, our entree.
What little canapes, what little amuse-bouches have you brought this week?
This week is a dead guy. Yeah, that wasn't a joke. this week there's been quite a lot of talk about Chinese spies slash influence in Australia, and in particular there are sort of two things. One is that someone who claims to be a Chinese intelligence officer is trying to defect to Australia and trying to seek asylum here, so that's interesting. But that's sort of a secondary story. The real big news that's come out is about this guy called Nick Zhao, who was approached by Chinese secret agents basically to encourage him to run for the Liberal Party in the seat of Chisholm. And they were basically like, yeah, we can fundraise you $1 million. And if you get in, that'll be sweet. And so he was like, yeah, I like the sound of that, but also I'm going to go to ASIO. So he went to ASIO and was like, hey, ASIO, these fucking Chinese spies tried to recruit me to stand for parliament on their behalf.
Damn, I don't know which is the more narky move. Like, either way, you're picking sides with the state. I guess the,
he was also a Liberal Party member beforehand, which kind of is like an interesting bit of context to this, that like it wasn't, they weren't just like random Chinese man. he was a luxury car dealer, which honestly to me, as if I were a Chinese spy, I would think luxury car dealers are probably a soft touch for giving $1 million away to, and not the kind of person who's likely to go to this ASIO.
I love the kind of careers that prepare people for politics.
Yeah.
You know, selling people shit. That's, yeah, that'll line you up nicely.
Look, I would rather have a couple more luxury car dealers and a couple less lawyers in parliament. Not the luxury car dealers at the top of my list.
How about just less of both?
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I'm fine with that.
You know about sortition? We get into another time.
Anyway, Nick Zhao died sometime later, and it seems, if
extremely
not likely,
unsuspicious?
Yeah. There is at least a strong suggestion that he might have been murdered by the Chinese government for telling ASIO about this thing. That's not confirmed yet, though, so that's pure speculation. What else is pure speculation is that the person who ended up getting elected in Chisholm is Gladys Liu. That's not speculation, that's fact. We've talked about Gladys a few times on this podcast. She's currently in court trying to defend the Chinese language signs that she made to imitate AEC material. But what's really interesting about this, she is a Chinese Australian, and she was standing in the seat that the Chinese agents told Nick Xiao to run in, and she raised, very famously, $1 million. Yeah, yeah. Now, I am definitely not insinuating anything or accusing Gladys of having taken $1 million from the Chinese government. So,
good. I'm glad that you are not doing that.
Yeah, all you listeners at home, I definitely do not want to give the impression that I am suggesting that Gladys Liu might have been compromised by the Chinese government.
I hate these conversations because I feel like we, as a nation, are incredibly ill-equipped to talk about this stuff with any kind of, nuance or respect, or without it, dipping immediately into racism.
Totally, yeah.
But on the other hand, China is an authoritarian state which is currently carrying out a genocide against Muslims. So it's not it's not about race, it's just about opposing state violence wherever it happens.
Mm.
But I never want to weigh in on this stuff personally. I mean, partially because I don't feel like I know enough about it, but also because I do feel like the conversations around them tend to be so fraught.
Totally.
And it doesn't help
when
you've got tankies muddying the water as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We should probably move on before we get in trouble.
Yeah. absolutely everyone. Yeah, cool. All right. So our next story is our First Nations story. And last week we sort of said, sorry that we keep bringing you all of this really depressing First Nations news. And excitingly, there's some good news this week. And this is about the Noongar compensation claim. I'm not sure I'm saying that correctly, but Noongar, who are a nation of First Nation groups down in the very southwest of Australia, down in Western Australia. And they have launched a case in the High Court to claim $290 billion of extinguished native title claims.
That's fucking huge.
It is huge. It is possibly the largest compensation claim ever in the history of the world ever. Mm. If you take into account inflation, that might not be the case. But anyway, so this is based on a test case that we actually reported on this show a couple of weeks ago.
Report is a very generous term, but yeah, we talked about it.
We discussed it, yeah.
Yeah,
so
talked about someone else's reporting.
That was the traditional owners of Timber Creek in the Northern Territory. They had 170 hectares of land, and they were awarded $2.5 million in compensation. And so the Noongar people and their lawyers have applied the exact same formula, which
is about 15 grand a hectare.
15 grand per hectare.
And this is for emotional and social damages?
And cultural. So it's actually
emotional and cultural.
So it's not just damages, it's the extinguishment of native titles. So that's basically if there was this land that these people were living on prior to colonization, that now the colonial enterprise or whatever has basically destroyed that land to the point that it's no longer possible for people to live there in the same way that they used to. And also stuff like destruction of cultural artifacts or of landscapes that were part of songlines, that sort of thing. So this is basically a payout for the destruction of the nation that was there prior to colonial invasion.
Which, the figure of almost $300 billion sounds like a large number, but when you, process the fact that you're talking about the destruction of nations, of people's entire culture, how can you actually put a monetary figure on that?
Totally.
And any $300 billion is probably a conservative number.
Yeah.
And I know that they were saying that the lawyers for the Noongar people bringing the case were actually $300 billion is a conservative estimate for how much
actual damage has been done. And but it's based on this existing formula, and so that's why they're doing that, is because they think that it's very likely they'll be able to get compensation at the same rate as this previous test case.
Yeah, it's huge.
And so the Western Australian government has kind of been like, maybe that's too much money. But we'll see what happens in court over the next weeks and months. And it's really exciting. Just for a bit of context, $300 billion is approximately 1 year's budget of the entire Australian federal government, which kind of makes it sound like not that much in a way, 1 year worth for like tens of thousands of years worth of culture destroyed.
Well, that's it. Like once you start to put together what is actually being compensated for, yeah, it's a drop in the ocean. I mean, look, these things are always kind of complicated because we're talking about, I guess, trying to use the apparatus of the settler colonial state to give justice to the people who were displaced and like murdered by that state.
But also in a form that is like a colonial one. It's like
exactly
with Australian dollars.
Yeah. But it's sad, I guess, that like that the settler colonial state has kind of created this situation where that is the only real recourse for any kind of justice at this stage. But it is amazing that that it's being brought, that we're talking about it, and that it seems like it has a pretty decent chance of success.
Totally, and that there are likely to be other similar claims made around the rest of so-called Australia.
Yeah, fucking get ready, whiteys, by which I mean us.
It's okay, he can say that he's white.
Some of my best friends are crackers and honkies.
All right. Well, speaking of using those words, let's move on to our next segment.
You fucked up.
This week, the people who fucked up were two reporters from The Australian, Deborah Cornwall and Sarah Way, who wrote an article with the headline, "Body in Freezer, Sydney Husband Questioned Over Wife's Death, A Quiet Man." This was brought to our attention by a tweet from Gina Rushton, who writes for BuzzFeed News Australia and who does amazing reporting on women's issues and reproductive rights. And you should go and follow her on Twitter and also follow her writing because she's doing...
I think she has a pinned tweet that's like, "I write stuff that you should probably stop calling women's issues." But yeah. Yeah, Gina Rushton, she's great.
That's a good point. I'll take that L. And she tweeted, "Here's how not to frame a story when a woman's body is found." And she posted a screen cap of the first two paragraphs of the article, which reads, "A woman whose body was found frozen rock solid in a freezer at her family's Sydney home had a strong, aggressive personality and often nagged her, quote, quietly spoken husband, according to friends of the couple."
Wow.
Yeah, so this is, as Gina points out, this is doing everything wrong in terms of how to report on the death of a woman at the hands of her husband. Gina goes on to post a guide from Our Watch, who is an independent not-for-profit, who basically are trying to change the way that the media reports on violence against women. And this basically breaks all of their rules. They have like a top 10 kind of pieces of advice for how to report on this stuff. And it's about doing things like not like focusing on the victim, for example, as opposed to the perpetrator, and like not making excuses for
him being quietly spoken or her being strong and aggressive.
Strong, aggressive, like, and, like, often nagging. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, why is this the information that is needed to contextualize this story?
Who allegedly killed his wife. Yeah, like...
It's just, like this conversation's been happening for so long, and these, you know, these reporters are just abjectly failing at their jobs. They're contributing to the problem.
Yeah.
And this kind of feeds into, I guess, a broader... not just obviously like inherent misogyny in both our society and also the way that we talk about these issues, but also this kind of idea that the media doesn't contribute to this stuff or that it's possible to objectively report on these kinds of things. Like, there is no such thing as an objective position. It's going to come out in the way that you write it one way or the other. So you need to take an active stance and you need to actively be working to report on this stuff in a way that doesn't legitimize male violence against women by talking about how hard those women were to be around.
Yeah.
I don't know why we need to
still
be
really
pointing
shocking.
That out in 2019. But anyway, that's fucked. They fucked up. And one thing that I just kind of wanted to talk about sort of as a counterpoint to that, I guess, is that this week was the Walkleys, and basically...
Which is the Journalism Awards for Australia.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck the Walkleys. Fuck the media in this country. They're complicit in the, like, devastation that climate change is wreaking on us, and a whole bunch of other stuff, including, you know, the
resurgence of white nationalism.
Yeah, and as we've just seen, the perpetuation of attitudes that foster violence against women.
Yeah.
But there is a Walkley Award awarded by Our Watch for basically
doing
how to do good reporting on violence against women. And this year they awarded it to Sarah Dingle,
mm-hmm.
Who reports for Background Briefing on Radio National for the ABC. See, they're not all bad, Noon. Noon's always like, I hate the ABC. They suck. Every single one of them is bad.
Lies and slander. I love centrism, and I resent you insinuating anything otherwise.
It's true. That's a very moderate position for you to take.
Background Briefing is legitimately great, though. Nearly
Absolutely.
Every week they do some fucking great deep reporting. And these ones that Sarah Dingle, there were three different segments that she did. One about carers killing people with disabilities, and one about urban slavery of migrant women, and the third one, I can't remember what it was about off the top of my head. But yeah, so they were really good stuff, and shout-outs to Sarah Dingle and Background Briefing.
Yeah, so like, if, as an antidote to witnessing like the absolutely horrifically irresponsible reporting from places like The Australian on these issues, maybe go and listen to those stories instead, which are not exactly easy listens, but they do come from a perspective of trying to actually socially contextualize these things and not, I don't know, treat them as these, I guess it's the attitude of treating them as these like individual cases which need to be explained
right.
by like an emotional
Why
or psychological
would this
instance.
Completely normal man have done this
yeah.
thing.
Oh, it's it such a shocking have, crime yeah. as opposed to, you know, this is part
happening
of an
all
epidemic
the time and is normal. Yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess that's, you know, always going to be the attitude of an outlet who, for example, doesn't want to talk about the causes of climate change either. It's
yeah.
all about, oh no, this is one isolated bushfire that just happens to be worse than all the ones that have come before it. Let's not talk about why.
Let's move on, I think. But I, while we were looking up the stuff about the Walkleys, we saw a tweet from Osman Faruqi, I think it was, who mm-hmm. said, just pointed out that possibly the best piece of journalism this year, which was the Haircuts and Hate, which was also a Background Briefing segment about the Nazis who infiltrated the National Party. And that, I'm sure everyone listening remembers that story from a couple months ago. And that just like fucking was incredible investigative reporting and didn't even get a mention. It wasn't nominated, nothing. So,
yeah, it's like, yeah. And he pointed out that the only piece of reporting on like fascism or white supremacy in Australia was like a puff piece about the family of the Christchurch shooter.
Yeah, yeah.
Which like there was a whole bunch of other actually like quite good reporting around that, not just Haircuts and Hate, which is an amazing piece. And yeah, Osman also pointed out that sort of parallel to the Walkleys, a list was released this week by there's some kind of media organization, Stream, comprehensive print, online TV, radio, and social media in real time. I don't know what they are. Whatever. They released a list of the 250 journalists in Australia with the most front page bylines, and 248 of them are white.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it tells you a lot about
our media landscape.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it's shithouse. So I'm not going to celebrate the Walkleys, but, you know, there are obviously people out there still doing good work.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that now is not the time for the media to be patting themselves on the back, I guess. But now it's time for
Shitpost of the Week.
So normally we try to give Shitpost of the Week to like actual humans in the group who have made original content. And this is actually a share, which technically qualifies for a Shitpost of the Week layup assist. So
I mean, stats on the board,
yeah.
one way or another.
So the original post is from the Fair Meme Commission, and it was shared into the group by Angus James, who I suspect may run the Fair Meme Commission, but I'm not sure about that. They both have great memes, both the Fair Meme Commission and Angus James' private profile. So this is a like remixed tweet that has been like very obviously and unsubtly edited.
How about I'll read what the original was, and then we'll do a reading where I'll read the original text and you read the Fair Meme Commission's
like
edits.
Updated version.
Yeah.
Cool.
So the original text is, today at Walmart, I told the cashier Merry Christmas. She said, Happy Holidays, sir. I smiled and said, you don't have to be afraid anymore. President Trump gave his Christmas back. She started crying tears of joy and said, Merry Christmas. And then everyone in the store applauded. fucking solid ass tweet.
That's a good
shout
tweet.
Out to at cheese for everyone on Twitter for this high quality content.
Yep.
Now here's the Fair Meme Commission's edit.
Reduxed.
Today at Walmart, I told the cashier Merry Christmas. She said,
"The insuring integrity bill has the numbers to win,
sir." I smiled and said, "You don't have to be afraid anymore."
The crossbench
gave us
our internationally recognized rights as workers back. Oops. Yeah, go on.
She started crying tears of joy and said,
"Solidarity forever."
And then everyone in the store applauded. I reckon you could do a slightly more energetic reading of that last line. She started crying tears of joy and said,
"Solidarity forever." Is that more energetic? I
100% brought that on myself.
You did.
I take full responsibility, and I apologize on both of our halves. So,
yeah.
But can I just take a quick moment too? The fucking government, it could just suck shit. This is, yeah. Like, it's so rare to see them get absolutely, like, completely destroyed in Parliament. Yeah. Like this. And it was just so satisfying.
It was beautiful.
Fuck you guys.
Yeah. I don't know if we need to do a huge amount of info here, but it has been a bad week for the government and Parliament.
Really,
and
real bad.
This was kind of like, I don't know if this is the cherry on top of the sundae, or this is the sundae that the cherries were put on. I don't know. But
Either way, it's a bad analogy.
Yes. Well, we talked about this last week, a shitty union busting bill, and it looked like it was going to go through, and it turns out both Jackie Lambie and Pauline Hanson voted against it, and so it was an even tie, I think it was 34 all, which is a...
Like, so it negates the bill.
Yeah, so in the lower house, the Speaker has a bonus vote, so if it's tied, the government wins. In the upper house, if it's tied, the government loses. And this was in the upper house, so they lost.
I mean, this came about purely because of absolute, like, shitty politics. Political maneuvering by the coalition, which is why it's so satisfying.
Well, there was
I mean, that and also Pauline is just... Well, I mean, that's the thing about both Pauline and Lambie is that you just kind of
you have
don't...
no idea what's going on.
I mean, you can be pretty sure that both of them are going to be racist most of the time.
Yes.
But beyond that, there are several... Yeah, they're wild cards.
A lot of people have been saying that the government was just so sure Pauline was going to hop in that they spent all of their time working on Jackie Lambie. And they gave Jackie Lambie the 11 amendments that she asked for, but she was still like, fuck, no. which is great. And Pauline, I think, felt kind of left out and ignored. And so she voted against it, basically. So now the government will have to talk to her.
I've also heard it said that you got the state election coming up in Queensland and there's the possibility that One Nation might get the balance of power.
Sure.
So maybe she's trying to like hedge bets with...
And look, for all of One Nation's many problems, they are not built on anti-unionism.
That is a true, basically true statement, as far as I can tell. I mean, as long as those workers aren't immigrants, I suppose, or not white anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's...
Point taken.
We've kind of got a sub-segment here, which is a blurst take.
It was the best of
takes.
It was the blurst of
takes.
You stupid monkey!
You want to take us through this bad take?
I just love this. So, yeah, you know, the government had this bill. They were absolutely sure that they were going to get it across the line with Pauline Hanson's support. And, like, they didn't find out until the vote was happening on the floor that she had switched sides and that they were going to lose. And so watching all of their hearts, like, break in real time.
Yeah. It was funny. I actually heard Penny Wong talking this morning on Insiders. And someone was like, Fran Kelly asked her, so I noticed you were smiling in Parliament a lot yesterday. Did you know that Pauline was going to flip? And she was like, oh, no, I was just stressed. I didn't think I was smiling. But I really wonder if she did know and was just like sitting there waiting for it to happen all day. Pretty phenomenal.
Amazing. But yeah, just like the dismay on the faces of the coalition was something beautiful to behold. And there's just this amazing quote from Eric Abetz, who I would say is high in the running for like absolute shittest person in Australia, in the Australian Parliament.
Yeah, he's up there.
Yeah.
Top five, easily.
Easily. Top five dickhead Eric Abetz. This quote from him. He said, "It was an absolute disappointment. One Nation traded with us in a manner that was not fair dinkum. It did not show any integrity, nor did it show honesty. Once you've done a deal, shaken hands, believe you have an understanding, to have someone renege on that without any prior warning whatsoever, it's not the standard you'd expect anywhere, least of all the Parliament.
Wow.
Motherfucker, like, have you ever, like, I don't know, it's just, it's like the old, like, literally the oldest joke potentially in the history of humanity is how can you tell when a politician is lying, their mouth is moving. have you met yourself? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. The
also, like,
I don't know, this is like the scales falling from his eyes. Is he about to go like full, oh my god, parliamentary representative democracy is broken?
Yeah.
Well, could be the next step. I'm sure he'd do it in an absolutely horrible racist way.
Oh, though. Yeah, definitely anarcho-capitalist vibes, you know, yeah. No, well, I mean, he is the grandson of a Nazi, and although I don't want to accuse him outright of still being a Nazi, I'm sure you can all imagine what I'm thinking about that. Yeah.
So this was all kind of part of our mains, I guess?
Yeah, which is about Parliament being a fucking shit show this week.
Yeah.
And one of the...
Well, it's, the mains is Parliament pork pies. I guess we should say the pun. We worked so hard on it.
I thought it up in like 4 seconds last night. But yeah, we worked hard on it. Parliament pork pies.
That's Cockney rhyming slang for Parliament lies.
Yeah. I think probably most people listening knew that, even though you didn't. I had to explain it to you before we started recording. But yeah.
You can't see it, but I'm doing bombs. That face from the meme where the guy is like, I don't even know how to describe it. He's just like, beg pardon?
Yeah, so the real shit show in Parliament this week, which was, you know, I was saying about the integrity was either the cherry or whatever. This is the other part of it, was Angus Taylor. And we reported on this sort of when it happened that Angus Taylor, who's the Energy and Environment Minister.
Emissions Reduction.
Minister for Emissions Reduction. Falsified some documents or obtained some documents which were falsified.
Don't tell Erica Betts about this. He'll be fucking shocked. I don't know if he can take it.
In Parliament?
Two politicians lying in 1 week?
Well, we might get a third. So Angus was like, you spent $6 million on flights to City Lord Mayor Clover Moore, which is not true. And she was like, that's not true. And he was like, oh, fuck, you supplied me with false documents so I would lie and then get in trouble about it. And it's just been a complete shit show. And so Angus seems to have misled the Parliament by saying that he and his office have had nothing to do with this false document and that they obtained it by downloading it from the City of Sydney website, which is blatantly false. Though we don't know actually how the document was made.
Yeah,
yet.
The plot thickens. Like, the City of Sydney has... It's like the Guardian did a Freedom of Information request, and they have now the like list of IP addresses that downloaded it. And it was like only 9 people on the day when Angus Taylor's office said that they got the document.
Yeah.
And look, you know, I'm sure that we'll find out one way or another, but they've opened the
police is investigating.
It's now an official investigation.
I think the charge that they're looking into is something like dealing with false documents or handling false documents or something like that. So it's not exactly that they're accusing Angus Taylor of having falsified it himself, though. Seems like,
I mean,
maybe.
Look, it's on the one hand, it's not out of the question.
No,
but like also, I'd be surprised if he was doing his own dirty work.
That's true. Yeah. It could easily have been a staffer or something.
And I forgot to mention this, and maybe I should pull up... I'm not going to pull up the tweet. I'm just going to fucking... I'm going to go off top and hope I remember this, but the Strike Force is called Strike Force Jared or Garrett? I'm not sure.
Yeah. Garrett.
Garrett. Strike Force Garrett. And there was just an amazing tweet that was 3 screen caps. And the first was a screen cap from what I presume was like a Herald Sun article basically talking about how the PC police have gotten into the real police, and it was like an internal memo from the New South Wales Police basically being like, okay, when you choose a name for a strike force or a special investigation or whatever, you need to make sure that it is not accidentally offensive, quote-unquote accidentally.
Yeah.
And seems they specifically like advised that if you're choosing a strike force name, to go and look it up on Urban Dictionary first to make sure it doesn't have some kind of like slang definition that you...
Sure.
As a white cop, do not understand.
Yeah.
then there's a screen cap of the word Garrod
on Urban Dictionary.
On Urban Dictionary, and it's just the definition is like someone who just consistently fucks things up all the time and is a huge idiot. And the third screen cap is the New South Wales Police have started investigation Strike Force Garrod to look into Angus Taylor.
I think that's a bit silly because the Urban Dictionary thing was clearly about an individual person named Garrod, and the person who made that post is called Garrod's mum. So I don't think it's a fun game. Go to Urban Dictionary and look up your name. Mine is interesting. Yeah.
But which one? Eno?
No, my actual middle name that I went by for a long
government
time.
Name.
Shh. They don't know. The government doesn't know. Strike Force Garrod.
It's good stuff.
And Scott Morrison, everyone was like, hey, maybe you should stand this minister down while he is being investigated by the police, like was the normal thing to do for the last, like, 60 years or whatever that this has happened. But the government has a wafer-thin majority and cannot afford to lose anyone. So Scott has been, like, standing by his man in Parliament, which has led to him potentially doing some very dodgy shit. So one of the dodgy things that he did was call the police commissioner to be like, hey, just checking, this isn't serious, right? And the police commissioner has come out and been like, there was nothing untoward in that phone call, and maybe there wasn't, but also, maybe Scott should have done the thing that, like, the normal thing to do, which would have been to ask his chief of staff to call the chief of staff of the cops to check what the situation is, rather than calling his old mate from the Shire where they grew up together.
And, like hey, buddy, they've previously spoken about the fact that they were mates, well, yes, they were neighbours,
yeah,
and Scott Morrison used to, quote, bring his bins in.
Yeah, which has now spawned the hashtag bingate, which, yeah.
I mean, this is a fuck-up. Like, this is quite a, like, as if you don't just get someone else in your office to make that call.
For real, yeah.
Like, the arrogance, I suppose, is all that could really be, or, like, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's because of the personal relationship thing, and he's like, it'll probably be easier if I do it.
Yeah.
But still, what a fucking... You're the Prime Minister, dude. You do not need to be doing this yourself.
There's that thing that people always talk about as there's either a conflict of interest or a perceived conflict of interest, and this is just, like, that to the max. Like, even if there was nothing dodgy, it's still dodgy as fuck for him to have done that personally. And, like, no, because he has an interest in the police commissioner finding that nothing went wrong. Like, that's what the conflict is. It's not like he's allowed to talk to the police department or whatever, but, like, calling his buddy and being like, just to make sure you're not going to fuck with my boy Angus.
Gussie Tay-Tay. He's on the level. You know, my man.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's amazing
that
he's basically been put in this position where they put Angus Taylor in this department, which they don't give a fuck about. So they, and like, he is an appointment to appease the hard right of the party. Mm. And it's sort of one of the only tactical decisions Labor has made that's been kind of effective this year, is to just absolutely hammer Angus Taylor in question time. And like, basically all of the discussion in Parliament this week has just been about Angus Taylor and how, like,
and he does seem to be at least moderately incompetent, Angus Taylor. Like, at the very least.
He's massively incompetent. And that, like, that's... Because he wasn't appointed because he's, like, a savvy political operator.
Right, right. He was appointed because he's...
Because of his
far-right nut.
Terrible values. Yeah. And this is what happens. But also in the course of this week, and here's the little... call back to the pork pies, which is Cockney rhyming slang for lies, if you guys didn't know, is that Scott Morrison misled the parliament, which, gotta love that official language, he fucking lied four times in parliament, which, like, you know, it seems like, again, shocking.
Maybe we should bust out this Erica Betts quote again, because, you know, misleading people is not the standard you'd expect anywhere, least of all the parliament.
Yeah, Scott getting burned by his own
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Lying to the parliament and the general public, that's fine. Voting on a bill, that's just inappropriate.
Yeah, look, let's not go crazy with it. And look, I'm not going to get into the details of how he lied. He basically like claimed that Labor had voted against a piece of legislation, and Labor was like, "That's a lie." And he was like, "Oh my bad, you voted against it on the third reading." And they were like, "That's also a lie." but yeah, I mean, he's like, he is a savvy political operator.
Yeah,
and those were like not purposeful lies.
No,
those are mistakes, and he's been caught out, and he got caught out calling the New South Wales police commissioner, and he has been painted into a corner backing this obviously incompetent fucking idiot who did this extremely dumb, very obvious lie that he's now getting investigated by the cops for. It's been a really, really bad week for the coalition.
Something else on Insiders this morning, they were sort of talking about how when Scott Morrison won this unwinnable election and so on, everyone was like, man, he's such a savvy operator, and he's, you know, going to be the messiah for the Liberal Party, and he'll never have a challenge and blah, blah, blah. And then this week he's just had like 4 major consecutive fuck-ups, and apparently people in the party are being like, maybe he wasn't the genius that we thought he might be. And hey, maybe an advertising executive might be better at winning elections than he is at running a large nation.
You know who would probably have a little bit more experience keeping things humming along would be a luxury car dealer.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Like, I think unironically,
Scott was in the...
He was probably,
he was in the wrong field. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you got to keep that Lexus going. You know what I mean? You can't sell the bunk product.
Cool. I think we might be just about finished for the week, or is there more?
No, I guess
more pork pies.
I don't exactly have a take precisely, but I suppose let me try and sum this up somehow. When we first started recording this podcast, I started reading a lot more about the actual machinations of our parliament and politics, particularly. And this is the first week I think in a while where we've actually done talked a significant amount about what happens in Parliament House, in the building itself, the conversations that happen there, and what is happening on the Parliament floor. Because generally speaking, I find it to be extremely boring, and
pointless.
Yeah, when I'm paying attention to it, it's just frustrating. Mm. I think a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah.
But I guess, looking at it a little bit more closely and reading a little bit more analysis, it's just starting to become more and more apparent to me that all these things that from the outside seem like they're like codified, or like there's these official ways that business is conducted and that people have to like do business inside inside Parliament. It's just a bunch of idiots running around. There's not really that many rules that they're bound by. Like, I remember one thing that really blew my mind was when you told me that preference deals are just literally what gets printed on the how to vote cards.
Yeah.
They're not anything more official than that. And I feel like all of this stuff that's happened this week in terms of the government has the numbers for this bill, right? And you kind of think maybe someone is keeping a tally of that somewhere in some kind of official or like objective capacity or whatever. Nah, it's all just like Pauline has just been like, yeah, sure, fuck it, I'll vote for you.
Yeah.
And then on the day is like, nah, actually, maybe I won't. And everyone's like, oh my God,
You're ruining the whole system.
And
it's like the system is you guys just like yelling at each other.
Yeah, just what this is bouncing off each other, and absolute stupid bullshit going on. There's criminal investigations happening of politicians. It's just a mess, you guys. That's my take. Politics is a mess.
You used to be able to be held in contempt of Parliament for not wearing a hat in Parliament, and now you can get in trouble for wearing a hat in Parliament. Yeah.
We said no props.
Important governmental business. You know, what the fuck?
I mean, they still have to. They still bring out the big fucking golden
mace?
Key or whatever the mace.
Yeah.
It's a novelty sized golden key to Australia.
Chocolate with gold foil on it.
It's a giant Toblerone, basically. Whoever wields the Toblerone holds the balance of power.
Okay, we have gone way off the rails here. Also, that thing about preferences, I think that's only in the lower house. I think there aren't real preferences in the upper house. But anyway, you didn't come here for facts. You came here for...
Definitely not from me.
Us laughing about our incompetent government.
And complaining about other reporters whilst saying flagrantly incorrect stuff.
Reporters, yeah. Yeah.
So, oh, man, I'm sorry, you guys.
Well, donate to our Patreon if you enjoy our wrong information, our laughing in the middle of serious stories.
Honestly, if I was listening to this,
food puns,
I would be researching furiously how to negative away money from a Patreon. How to steal money from a Patreon.
Don't give people ideas, dude. Cool. All right.
But also follow us on Facebook at Ozpol Snackpod, or join the group, Ozpol Shitposting. Find us on Twitter at Ozpol Snackpod. You can also find me on Twitter at Lil Snack Pickle. That's LilSnackPickle. Yeah, I don't really tweet about politics. I mostly tweet about
rap music.
Yeah.
And bread.
Yes. Yeah. That, like, that's actually my top two topics. Yeah. Toast and bad raps. And yeah, I mean, if you do enjoy the stupid bullshit that we say, then you can hear a little bit more of it. If you donate $1 a month to our Patreon, you get a bonus episode every month, as well as other cool stuff if you want to throw us a few more bucks. And if you can't or don't want to support the show financially, but you'd like to support us some other way, please leave us a review wherever you can. The best place to do it is probably iTunes. You can also review us on CastBox and Stitcher, and you can also leave a review on Facebook, which we were alerted to by friend of the show, Steph, who was like, hey, how come you haven't read out my Facebook review?
Yeah. So Steph gives us 5 out of 5 and says, 10 out of 10 memes and also smart political explainings. A fun and educational way to consume the news. Also, Noon and Zach are a delight. Thanks, Steph.
That's very sweet. Thank you. I reckon that's probably it. Keep on snacking in the free world.
Crunch, crunch.